Welcome to the Collecting Wisdom podcast. Collecting Wisdom is a space where you'll find intimate conversations on life, yoga, philosophy, and what it's like to live on purpose from those that I've personally met and have collected wisdom from on my own path. I'm Marissa Rose, founder of The Well Studio, yoga teacher and teacher trainer, and I will be your host on the Collecting Wisdom podcast. I hope that as you listen to these words and soak up the wisdom in these conversations, that they inspire you towards change and encourage and empower you in your own path, in your own self-knowing, and in your own self-evolution. All right. Welcome back to the Collecting Wisdom podcast. It is such an honor to be sitting here with Ashley Turner. Ashley is a teacher that I actually studied with several years ago during the pandemic. I completed your 300-hour yoga teacher training that was focused on yoga psychology, and it was an absolutely incredible experience. I feel it really took my teaching to the next level in a way that I was specifically looking to go, in a direction that I was specifically looking to be on with my students and my mission as a teacher. And I just so align with who you are as a human being and how you offer yoga and psychology in the world. So I'm so excited to be here with you, Ashley. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful.
Absolutely. So I want to share a little bit about Ashley, and then I'll have you share a little bit about your journey as well. But if you don't know Ashley Turner, she is a yoga meditation expert, a licensed psychotherapist, a writer, facilitator, and a seven-figure entrepreneur. She is the visionary and founder of the Center for Yoga Psychology, an innovative, scientifically grounded training center for teachers, clinicians, and dedicated students fusing yoga, mindfulness, trauma resolution, shadow work, and neuroscience. She's also been featured in media outlets such as the Washington Post, Shape, Self, Women's Health, Yoga Journal, Mind Body Green, Well and Good, Sounds True, and many more. Ashley is a sought-after speaker, facilitator, and presenter at conferences and events worldwide. And as I shared, I had the experience of really getting to learn and soak up so much wisdom from you on everything that you teach: trauma, psychotherapy, yoga, mindfulness, meditation, how it all relates to the human spirit and this journey of life. And I'd love for you to take us back to your journey and when you started teaching over 2 decades ago, it sounds like. And I'd love to hear just how you found yoga, or how yoga found you.
Yeah, I really think that the last one is true. I think yoga finds us, and we are really blessed. You know, they say that in the yoga tradition, one of the greatest karmas that you can have is to be born into a family of yogis, to be born to parents that are yogis, because you'll be living with that framework and that orientation paradigm your whole life. So I was really lucky. Right after I grew up in Illinois, and then I moved out to Los Angeles. I went to USC, University of Southern California. And as soon as I graduated, I stayed in LA and I was acting for a few years. But luckily, the summer I graduated, I met one of my dearest friends to this day, Govind Das, who owns Bhakti Yoga Shala. And his name was Ira Rosen at the time. And we met and had a really strong connection right off the bat. We met at like a party in Hollywood, but we had such a strong connection. And right away, we started training together for the LA Marathon. And while we were training, he kept talking about yoga and Brian Kest in Santa Monica. And I mean, we were actually trying to do Ujjayi breathing, running around, you know, going on these long runs. And then we both were like, I don't think that works too well for running a marathon. But eventually, in the near future, he took me to Brian Kest yoga class. So this was in 1996, 97. And as soon as I did the class, the first class I took, I walked out onto the street and I was just like spellbound. I was completely hooked. And I remember walking across the street and he was like, what do you think? And I was like, that was orgasmic. Like my whole body was just lit up. My whole soul, you know, my whole being was lit up. And so I found yoga really young, right after college. And he, you know, Govind Das I consider him my root teacher because he introduced me to the practice. And then he started teaching right away. And we would just get into these really long philosophical, spiritual conversations. And we really, essentially, it was Jnana Yoga. You know, we were practicing the type of yoga called Jnana Yoga, which is the philosophy and psychology of the practice. And at the same time, he also introduced me, of course, he's a great bhakti yogi. So he introduced me to Krishna Das and Ram Das. Actually, I remember he gave me a cassette tape of Ram Das called Dying into Life. And that tape also, which also dates me, but that tape changed my life completely because I listened to that and I was like, whoa, this is a whole other world. What is this? And also Krishna Das's first EP, which was the first song that he was putting out. And I would listen. It was very foreign to me, you know, listening to Sanskrit, listening to chants. It kind of freaked me out a little bit, but my heart, you know, I loved it. And it was very healing for me. And I had gone through a really tough time in college and had a big sort of core wound of rejection. And at the time, I don't think I realized it, but I definitely was experiencing depression and low self-esteem and body image issues. And then acting on top of it in LA was just adding to that. So the yoga practice really started healing me from the inside. And it completely started to shape shift my personality, my worldview. And so very shortly after that, you know, a couple of years later into the practice, I wanted to start teaching. I started teaching and that was it. So I started teaching in 2000 and never looked back. And it just became, you know, it was a calling, I think, like it is for many people. It was clearly a part of my dharma. And I just couldn't not teach, and I still can't not teach. You know, I was not teaching in studios for several years, many years, actually the last few years. And I just realized about 6 months ago, I've been going through a really intense journey with perimenopause, and I realized I need to be back in the studio teaching people. So I just, luckily one of my students teaches at an amazing studio in my neighborhood, or she manages it. And so she invited me to come start teaching one class a week. And I'm so grateful because it just keeps me in the rhythm of the practice, which for me is life-changing and life-saving, actually.
Yes, I completely understand that. I appreciate you sharing so much of your journey. I didn't know all those pieces, and it's really inspiring to hear just how yoga has been a part of your life. And at such a young age, I also found yoga when I was in college. I was 19, and a friend of mine came back from a spring break, and her whole energy was just glowing. I think it was the first time I was able to kind of like see or feel into someone's energy. It was just so palpable. And I just asked her, I said, what have you been doing? And she goes, it's yoga. And, you know, as you know, yoga was not what it was back then, what it is now, very, very different. And I would go to this little studio and we were doing a 90-minute hatha practice in yoga nidra, I mean, 5, 6, 7 times a week. And I changed from the inside out. I was at a school, going out, partying, drinking, and all of a sudden, I couldn't do it anymore. And I feel that's why I am so attracted to what you teach, because there was not language for what happens through the practice of yoga in the human body, the mind, the spirit. And you've given it language for so many of us. I didn't know what was happening to me. All I knew that I was different. And my friends were like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know what's happening to me. But it changed my life. And it happened pretty quickly by being deeply steeped in the practice. And that will be a majority of what we focus on today, and just why I'm so grateful for you and your mission. I actually got to take Brian Keff's class in Ojai just a couple of years ago. And it was so cool to get back to that route as well, because I would say my lineage has come from his work too. So I'd love for you to share just at a 101 level, how we can start to think of yoga as a psychology, how we can think of the two as interweaving. And just as I shared, I had a very somatic experience of changing, but not necessarily the language for what is happening when you really start to show up to the practice of yoga. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about that and what that means and what that can look like.
Yeah, people always ask me, you know, what is yoga psychology? And I kind of laugh at that because yoga is a psychology. And anyone that has studied, you know, the practice to even a little bit of a degree, hopefully has been taught that the practice is so much more than the poses. Of course, in the West, in the United States, we've really been, you know, what's been popularized is the yoga asana, the physical practice of yoga, which is essential and amazing. Mm-hmm. But that's only one type of yoga, and that's the hatha yoga. And then there's bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of spirituality. And by the way, the different schools of yoga are associated, as you know, that we taught in Yoga Psyche Soul, but they're associated with different chakras. So actually we can start from the root. The root chakra is hatha yoga, the physical practice, which orients us to the physical body. And I think it helps to actually take a step back and look at the overarching framework. One of the primary frameworks that I think is essential in the yoga practice is the idea of the koshas, the yogic model or map that a human being is made up of five different realms or five different bodies. So first we have the physical body. Second, we have our energetic, our pranic body. The third, we have our mental emotional body. This is the realm of psychology and personality and, you know, emotional, a lot of the core wounds. Next, we have what the yoga tradition calls the wisdom body. And one of my teachers, Yoga Rupa Rod Stryker, likes to call this the light of the inner teacher, which I love. So there's not really an equal correlation in sort of the Western model, but this idea that we carry a part of our mind is connected to deep wisdom and knowing. And then the fifth layer is the spiritual body. And so if we start there and understand that we are multidimensional beings, we are spirits having a human experience, how do we optimize each one of these five bodies so that we have more access to our soul, our essence, you know, what you were speaking about, what I was speaking about, what the practice did, which was tune us in to that part of our nature, which is, you know, I think of it as our soul. I think of it as the, you know, Sat Nam, the true nature of who we are, which is beyond name and form. All of those other bodies, the outer koshas, are the form that we can get attached to, you know, our personality, our relationships, our physical body, our family, our finances, the different roles that we're playing out. That's all part of the personality or the physical nature. But what we want to do is create the most sattvic environment, the most optimal environment that we can to live in the most harmonious environment. And when we do that, we naturally have more access to that light. You know, some might call it the light body. That's a nice analogy. So anyway, there's different yogas that are associated with each one of these bodies. Mm-hmm. So the physical body is the hatha yoga practice. The second chakra is our sexual and sensual nature. And that's tantra yoga, the yoga of sensuality, sexuality, but also relationship. The third chakra is our power center. And the yoga associated with that is karma yoga, which I think is really interesting because our power center is also the center of our ego. So in modern Western psychology, we think about, we want to have a strong, what we call ego strength, which is a strong sense of our individuality. But we also want to then transcend that and realize that on one level, yes, we're different people, you and I, but on another level, the spiritual level, we are connected and we're inseparable. And so karma yoga is the yoga of selfless service. And in other words, we would use that as a practice when we're getting really caught in our own stuff, in our own stories, in our own selfishness or our own self-absorption. Even if it's, I'm going through something intense and we can tend to spin on that, the best practice that you can do is go be in service to someone else. And all of a sudden your framework, the way that you are attached and identified with yourself starts to loosen and you start to like lift your head and look up around and connect to other people. So karma yoga is really helpful for that. Fourth chakra is the heart. And that is bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of chanting spirituality, ritual, puja, that really connects us to the spiritual nature of who we are and helps us to open our heart and expand our heart. Fifth chakra is the throat center. and that's mantra yoga. So really working with communication, our voice, creativity. Sixth chakra is the third eye center, which is our sense of image. And so that's yantra yoga, working with sacred symbolism and also archetypes. And then the seventh crown is yana yoga. And so that's philosophy, reading spiritual texts of all traditions, getting into Socratic, Socratic method of really unpacking philosophy and psychology of what is this world about. So we can use different yogas to help us heal or bring us into balance and harmony in the different realms of who we are. So in terms of your question of the psychology of yoga, I think one of the most important things, number one, it's helping us to, in the physical realm, train our body, of course, become strong and flexible, but also because we're working so much with breath, and hopefully, by the way, anyone listening is going to a yoga teacher that emphasizes the breath, because that's the most important part of the practice. You are training your nervous system. And this is where we really get into the rewiring. Now we have language for that in Western model of, neuroplasticity and the vagus nerve and training ourselves from the sympathetic and bringing us down into the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, of course, of study now with trauma resolution and how literally what we're doing in the physical practice when we're breathing mindfully and moving mindfully is we're starting to unwind the physical holding patterns and the energetic holding patterns in our body. And that has an immediate, and the body and mind are inseparable. They are connected. They're two sides of the same coin. Mm. So when we're doing the physical practice, it is helping us to reshape and reorient in our mind. But some of the tangible science around it is definitely the nervous system rewiring. Other big factors in terms of the physical practice that are really helpful is that yoga cultivates what's called interoception, which is our ability to tune in to what's happening in the interior of our body. And so, for example, I know for myself, this is one of the most important, and I didn't even learn this term until, 5 or 8 years ago, but I started to really understand, I was kind of shocked when I got into my practice and I realized, oh, I never really knew where my kidneys were or where my liver was, what side it was on, it's on the right side, or, I could start to feel all these different parts of my body, much less the joints and the muscles, and it increases our sensitivity internally. And so your story was great because you were saying, I was out, I was partying, I was doing all these things. And then all of a sudden I just couldn't do that anymore. Most likely one of the reasons that you couldn't do that, and I'm the same way, is because we become more sensitive. We become more aware of how different choices are impacting our physiology. How do I feel in my physical and energetic body? And things like alcohol or, fried food or really intense, overstimulating environments or negative people really deeply affect our energetic and physical body. And the more aware we become of what's happening in our body, the wiser we are in making those choices. Mm-hmm. So if we get into the psychology of how this starts to shift in our mental, emotional realm, in that third layer, that third kosha, number one, yoga starts to, at least for me, it started to really open up the aperture of, shifting my paradigm of what life is about and realizing I am connected to all these things around me and see more subtly how my choices were impacting me. And it can help us create what's called a more unitive experience or more transcendent consciousness of, again, realizing the interrelationship of everything, that yoking, right? Or the place of namaste, like where we meet, where we are one. When I'm in that place and you're in that place, we are one, right? So it helps us in many different ways. It helps, those are some of the science pieces of orienting in the body, creating more safety in the body, more strength in the body, building up our interoception, our sense of the interior life, building up our sense of self and creating this more unitive awareness. And I think helping us to tone and train our energy body too, and really strengthen from the inside out. One of the biggest shifts for me in the practice was starting to orient and prioritize my own internal reality more than my external reality. In other words, we are socialized to focus on the outer world and seek validation in the outer world. This is our conditioning with the media and continuing now in social media. And it takes a real discipline to unplug, unhook from that, maybe recognize when it's happening, but then make a more conscious choice. So the last piece that I would add in terms of just a little primer of what yoga psychology is and the benefits is that the practice helps us to increase our window of tolerance, which means it gives us a little bit more space between, you know, it gives us more capacity to be present and stay present in our body and in our energetic body when, you know, there's an intense or uncomfortable stimulation. Mm. So whether that's a thought that we don't like, a memory that we don't like, a sensation in our body, something happening around us, instead of just reacting to that, we can create a little more space, a little more pause, which is called our window of tolerance. We don't have to just react or shut down or get angry or irritable. We can make a wiser choice. And it gives us that space between stimulus and response, which is where our wisdom lies ultimately. And so then we start making more mindful choices. And I think that window of tolerance is huge. I know for me, it really started to create more space in my life and hopefully over time, making more mindful choices, becoming more subtle in our awareness. So that's a lot in there, but that's a short answer. Short answer.
It's so beautifully stated and so necessary. So thank you. I know that I have also experienced that increase of the window of tolerance. I think that's really relatable language for anyone who's trying to conceptualize what we're talking about. And I think for those of you that are listening that have, you know, been in your practice of yoga to look back on when you first started and to reflect on how your window of tolerance has changed or expanded. I know I've seen this in my life in many ways, and just specifically feeling a lot safer and more comfortable even in my body and in all sorts of environments throughout the many, many years that I've been practicing. I appreciate that. And I can deeply relate. I'd love to go a little bit more micro into trauma specifically and how yoga impacts trauma. I know in our teacher training, you taught on the difference between a bottom-up approach and a top-down approach. And I know that really resonated with me and how I thought about trauma in the body and how yoga can impact or shift trauma over time. And I'd love for you to speak on that.
Yeah, well, I would start by saying I don't consider myself a trauma specialist, although teaching for 24 years and being in the, you know, as a licensed psychotherapist for almost 20 years, it's obviously a huge piece of my work. And, you know, the first thing is to just start with, I think, defining terms. And trauma is, and I love Hala Kuria, she was in our training as a guest expert. Her, you know, frame on trauma is that trauma is anything in our life, any experience that overwhelms the nervous system and leaves us feeling helpless, hopeless, or out of control. So it's very subjective. And, you know, everyone mostly, I don't like to ever use absolutes, but, you know, we've all experienced varying degrees of traumatic experiences in our lives. So it doesn't have to be necessarily a big T trauma, which terms of big T trauma and little T trauma. Big T trauma being anything that we might think of like a car crash or, you know, abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, verbal abuse, or abandonment, or living in a, you know, a violent environment, a war-torn environment, genocide, something that maybe really threatens our physical harm, but also emotional abuse. And I would include in that, of course, attachment disorders, and in especially early childhood, that also constitutes big T trauma. And then we also have to include in that systemic oppression, because it's important to name that. It's a huge field and realm of trauma in our world that I think has only recently been really explored to the beginning to be explored to the degree that it needs to be, which is many populations that are in marginalized communities, whether that's socioeconomic, you know, sexual identity, gender identity, of course, race, ethnicity. When people are living as or identifying as any kind of marginalized population, going out on the street, you know, they're living in a hypervigilant body where their body, their being is being attacked consciously or unconsciously, you know, all the time. So I just want to name that. And then little t trauma could be smaller things like bullying. You know, Hala tells a great story about hair trauma that she had growing up Lebanese and in Miami in America, of just feeling different and feeling maybe being made fun of for her hair or not knowing what to do with it. Right. So, you know, those are some examples of little t trauma, losing a job. But, you know, the experience of being out of control, I think one of the biggest benefits of the physical practice, and you mentioned this as well, is that it can help us to reclaim a sense of safety, a sense of autonomy in our body, a sense of control in our body, and begin to orient and understand the tools that we have in our own being. And again, that's all five of those that I mentioned, all five realms in the beginning, using tools like our breath to help us self-regulate, tools like physical tools that can help us discharge the nervous system. So that being said, I also want to start by saying many people who've experienced trauma do not feel safe in their bodies. Maybe they had to dissociate. Maybe they had injury. It's really wired into their nervous system. And so once someone starts doing the practice, it's like in, as a psychotherapist, we are by law, by ethically, we are meant to tell our clients in the beginning, once you start therapy, it might get worse before it gets better. And that can be the experience with people going into something like yoga, where you are really opening up the physical body, you're opening up the energetic and emotional body as well. And so if there's been memories stored or your nervous system is wired in a certain way and you start going in and really shape-shifting and unlocking and unwinding that, it can be challenging and it can be even more challenging than what it was before, because before you had it packed in a nice tight little closet in the back, you know, and now you're opening it up and starting to explore it. So some of those sensations or memories or feelings that might come up can be challenging for people. So it's really important for the yoga teachers listening to understand, and even the students listening, that if you're witnessing someone experiencing, you know, challenge or being, we would say maybe overstimulated or triggered, just to know how to work with that and help that person continue to orient, continue to ground, create a safe environment where they can explore that. So it's kind of twofold. Like, it can be really helpful, but it can also start to bring up a lot of stuff that if it hasn't been explored before, can be triggering, re-traumatizing even. So this is just how our psychology, how our psyche, how our shadow and our unconscious is living in the body. And because of that, yoga can be one of the greatest tools to help heal trauma. On top of it, in the yoga tradition, you know, we're practicing certain philosophical principles. Hopefully, again, your teachers are emphasizing this. So we're learning how to stay compassionate, how to stay mindful, how to be less judgmental and to simply observe when these things arise. So in this way, hopefully your practice is helping you begin to do that deeper exploration in a safe way, in a way that you can, what's called titrate. So you don't have to like jump off the deep end, but maybe you can start being curious and holding some of the attitudes of mindfulness, of curiosity, non-judgment, compassion, to just get curious about what your life experience has been, how it might be living and manifesting in your body, and how you can begin to heal that, release that. And, you know, I say heal, but I honestly don't even know if I believe that we all this, you know, get past, like there's nowhere to go, right? It's really about changing our relationship to, In other words, maybe you had a really traumatic experience. Maybe you had an abandonment in your past. I don't know that, you know, in our life, we ever totally get past that and we're never, you know, triggered by that again. But hopefully the healing path is we can start to change our relationship to that. And it takes up less space. It's less dominating. It's, we can observe it. We can befriend it and welcome it in as an, as natural part of who you are and part of your soul's journey and not pathologize it. And over time, it has a less and less impact, hopefully. So I do want to state that because I think, you know, we live in a culture and especially the Western model, especially the Western medical and even psychological model is based on a pathological approach that there's something wrong, right? If there's a symptom, there's something wrong and we need to fix it. And a more yogic or integrated Eastern approach would change the whole paradigm. So the psychology that I studied, depth psychology, would look at anything in our life, whether it's depression, divorce, and say, it's not wrong. It is what it is. And how do I want to relate to that? What is the meaning that I'm choosing to make of it? So I like to really work from a non-pathological paradigm. And I think that's really important when people are starting to explore this stuff and bring more understanding to it.
It's such a new perspective and a paradigm shift for so many of us, I think, that are told or think that we have to fix ourselves. Our lives. I remember that was a big shift for me to learn from you. So I thank you for that. And I know you mentioned, yes, many of us experience trauma. Some of us are working through it. Maybe we haven't experienced trauma, but it does feel like we all experience some scars to a degree. And this is something that I've worked with a lot in my practice of yoga and that I've seen major changes in through yoga, through mindfulness, meditation, pranayama. And I'd love for you to share your perspective on some scars and, you know, how our thought patterns, I think you use a language like create holding patterns in our body, but also we can shift those samskaras, we can shift those deeply rooted thought patterns and become new. And I know that I've experienced that. So can you tell us more about how that works or how we might experience that from our practice?
Yeah. So the word samskara in Sanskrit, I like to think of it as essentially an imprint. And it's an imprint in our minds. In other words, a thought pattern or a thought form that we have, but it's also an imprint in our energetic body, in our nervous system, which then can manifest in our physical body and holding patterns. Again, they work, you know, they're two sides of the same coin. So it's not, we're talking inseparable body, mind as one word. And samskara, if you think of water, you know, water is always going to find the path of least resistance. So once we have a thought, we're more likely to have that same thought the next time. It's like water goes down that groove, the neurons fire, and it's sending that message through the neural pathways. And then because that groove is starting to be etched, it's more likely that we're going to think the same thought again. And I think in neuropsychology, I don't remember the exact statistic, but I think it's something like we're thinking 70% of the thoughts or more that we think, and someone can correct me on this, are the same thoughts. We're thinking pretty much the same thoughts over and over each day. And I think most of us can probably relate to that. We have the same, you know, attitudes, perceptions, you know, of course, we're looking at the world with a certain paradigm and we're choosing what we're focusing on. And so that's a whole other piece of science is that basically whatever you look for, you will find in your reality. So change what you're looking for, change the way you're looking. Samskaras, if we think of this, one other thing to note about it is the more intense the experience is, the deeper the groove, the deeper the pattern is. So if we had a really traumatic event or a really emotional experience that was tied to that, it's more likely that the groove of that thought, that emotional pattern is going to be deeper because it's etched more deeply in the neural pathways. So that's also something to note. And then we can think of, oh, what are our, you know, I work a lot with my therapy clients on what are your stories, right? What are your two or three or four themes in your life that keep coming up over and over again? Well, that's going to give you an example of where your samskaras are. That's the good news and the bad news, because the challenge, of course, is that the more we think that thought, the deeper that groove gets. But the good news is neuroplasticity, we can change those thoughts and we can change that pattern. And although it's like changing the path of a river, it can be done. And then this is where the practice becomes so powerful, because when we have a little more space, we can choose more wisely. Oh, that's actually not the thought. And this is a psychological practice called thought monitoring practice. That's actually not the thought I want to be thinking. You know, you can just actually take a step back, you know, cultivate the witness mind and ask yourself, is the thought that I'm thinking creating the reality that I want? Right. And I use this a lot with my partner, because of course he's the person that is the most challenging for me to work with in my life and the closest to me. Mm-hmm. And so I taught this in Yoga Psyche Soul in the relationship module. If I'm thinking, oh, he's so, you know, fill in the blank, you know, he's so rigid, or he's so this, or he's so that, is that actually getting me closer to the reality that I want? No. So let me just change that thought. Even it can be a simple reframe of, wow, he's so disciplined. He's like, how can I reframe it as a positive? He's so consistent. He's so reliable. And then I'm looking at the light in him, right? I'm not focusing on how I might frame it in the negative. That's an example of how I can take a pause and then choose a different thought pattern. Or I could simply just choose to look at all the things that are, you know, so amazing about him and that I love so much, and start to, you know, it's like Thich Nhat Hanh has the great quote, whatever, you know, the seeds that flower are the seeds that you water. So be mindful of which seeds you're watering. And this is so profound and it's so simple, but it doesn't mean it's easy. And in your life, you know, what is one, to give everyone listening, like one takeaway, what is one consistent challenge in your life? You know, what is something that you can change today, changing your thought around it? How can you show up today and every day? What is one thing you can do every day that if you just change that one thing, it will over the long term make a big difference? So, you know, an example for me might be working out. You know, I work out pretty consistently. At least I would think it's consistent. My partner is extraordinarily consistent. He never misses a day. He's a trainer. It's his job. He's a world-class trainer and he's in incredible shape. And so he's really taught me how to reframe it and be like, no, let me look at discipline as a real benefit. And let me look at the positives of discipline instead of like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm not that self-disciplined. Let me choose a different thought pattern, which is I am disciplined, and discipline actually creates the freedom that I'm seeking. Mm. So, you know, that's one simple example, but I think the practice, you know, one of the great things about yoga, especially if you're doing hatha yoga, is that we can see this very clearly in the physical body. It's easier and more tangible for us to see it in the physical form. So you take something like alignment and you can look down at your feet and see if their heels are aligned, right? If they're lined up, or if your feet are actually, you know, hip width distance apart and the inner soles are symmetrical. And you can just making those small, subtle shifts and being more mindful with how you place your body, you can see the different patterns that you're starting to open or unwind in the physiology. But the same exact thing is true in our psychology. So I like to use the physiology as a metaphor for what is also happening in the psychology.
I love the metaphor because that's exactly where my mind went, is like how beautiful is it that what we're talking about is really our yoga off of the mat, you know, how we relate to life, how we relate to ourselves, how we relate to our thoughts. Like, wow, we are that powerful that we can create new patterns. It's just absolutely incredible. I will continue to always be fascinated by it.
Yeah. It's part of the magic, right? Of being human.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It feels like magic as you were talking. I just hope that everyone that's listening is like, wow, I can do that. I get to do that. It's empowering.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about women's health, aging, how that relates to mental health and yoga. I know this is a direction that you've really pivoted to, and I'd love to hear more about that pivot for you. Many of our listeners, you know, are in female bodies, and I know we talked about even before we started recording, just like being like older sisters to younger generations. And I'd love to just hear where you are and what you would love to share on this part of the conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the more I've been kind of launched into this topic because I had my daughter really late in life, and I was 46 when I had her. Luckily, I think it's important to name that I did freeze my eggs when I was 37, and that was the egg that we used to have her. So it wasn't totally it wasn't natural. I mean, it was natural that I had her, you know, but it was with the assistance of IVF. And then we did, you know, more hormones and IVF to implantation to have her. So I had her at 46, and then, which was such a miracle, such a gift, a gift of my life. And it was something that I had really yearned for. And it was a huge karma for me, a huge challenge, because it took me a long time to find the right partner to have a child with. And I was with someone before that was ambivalent about having a child, and then wasn't really ready to do IVF. And that's when I froze my eggs, and it was really heartbreaking. And I knew from a very young age, from, you know, 2021, I mean, all the way through my life, that having a family was one of the most important things to me. And so it was really heartbreaking as I went through my 30s and late 30s and early 40s and still, you know, didn't have my man or didn't have my child. And so luckily that did happen for me, and that's not the case. And I really want to name that, because I know so many people are on, not the case for everyone. I know so many people are on fertility journeys, and they might not turn out that way. And I think the first thing I would say is, I do think that, you know, the yoga practice gave me the frame of orienting primarily to my soul and the soul journey, and realizing that I'm going to have my own individual soul lessons. And we don't necessarily, I think, get to choose what those soul lessons are. And so if we can orient first and foremost to our soul, and then ask instead, why is this happening to me? Instead of asking that, asking, okay, this is interesting. Wow, this is interesting. What is this trying to teach me? You know, so for those 20, 25 years that I was intent on having a child and it was elusive, okay, I'm curious. That's interesting. All right. Life is turning out like this. What am I here to learn from this? You know, what is my soul unfolding here and learning? And after I had her, I was 46, and then I breastfed her for 2 years. And so I stopped breastfeeding her at 48, and then I basically launched right into full on perimenopause, and I didn't realize that even was what was happening. I mean, I kind of had an instinct because I had had some symptoms earlier, like a year after I had her, that had started, but I don't know if it was because I was too busy. I was so busy with a new child and all the other things that were happening in my life, COVID. But I just wasn't oriented to perimenopause and menopause, this journey. And it really sideswiped me. And for the last 2 years, I've been experiencing, I'm about to turn 50. And that's a whole other topic of aging and becoming pro-aging, I think is really important for us as women, to empower ourselves to embrace the journey of aging. Instead of, you know, when I turned 40, I didn't really want anyone to know I was turning 40. I didn't really talk about it. I never really shared my age. And then I started to realize, like, I'm contributing to an ageist culture if I'm not being transparent and honest about my age. And why am I not? You know, why am I ashamed to be 50, turning 50, right? So I think it's just about reclaiming our power as women and really reshaping the narrative around aging, you know, everything from the fertility journey to perimenopause, menopause. When I got launched into perimenopause the last 2 years, I've experienced an enormous amount of symptoms that were actually quite debilitating. And I didn't, again, realize quite what was happening. But in the end, I was definitely experiencing depression and anxiety and, you know, intense, you know, insomnia, waking up, you know, sleep deprivation, and then brain fog. And so it took me a while. And another piece about menopause, perimenopause, essentially, which is the 7 to 10 years before you, you know, menopause is the moment you don't have a period for 12 months. And so it's 7 to 10 years before that is the journey of your hormonal shifts. And obviously it's different for everyone, but one of the symptoms of particularly loss in testosterone is losing a sense of agency and feeling overwhelmed and not as able to be in action and take action. And so I remember like a year ago, even the thought of figuring out how to go to the pharmacy and get my hormones was like daunting to me, or figuring out how to find a functional medicine doctor. Like it all seemed really daunting because I was just spinning in this really, you know, low level of hormones that was deeply affecting my mental health. So I want to name that because, again, I didn't have any, even I have a lot of friends that are older than me, cousin, all my cousins are older than me, you know, obviously my mom, my gynecologist, who's quite holistic, and I've been with her for like over 20 years, 25 years, no one came to me and said, hey, you know what? You're 40. You know what? You're going to turn 45. You're 35. Actually, that's a lot of symptoms can start then. Let's just have a conversation about perimenopause and menopause and what that might look like in your life. You know, hopefully like we're having with our children who are women, girls who are starting to menstruate or getting on birth control or becoming sexually active. You know, hopefully we're starting to have conversations about how to do that really mindfully and wisely. And I was, you know, here I am as in the wellness field, you know, as a longtime yoga teacher and therapist, and yet this conversation never happened directly. And so it took me off guard until finally, luckily, one of my older sisters, one of my friends, Alyssa Goodman, who's a little over 10, 12 years older than me, was like, we got to get your hormones checked. Like I think you really are bottoming out. And she was the one that kind of pulled me aside and was like, let's do this. Let me help you. Let me read your hormones. And that's what got me on the right track. But I want to bring a lot of awareness to this now because I don't know how old you are, but for you and your listeners, like I want to be a guiding light and help women that are younger and a younger generation be much more educated and armed with a lot more resources so that even starting at 35, 40, you know, it's really important to get your hormones tested then so you know what your baseline is. I mean, obviously to know if you're even in like an optimal range, but definitely to have a baseline and then be checking, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe once a year when you go to your, you know, GP or your gynecologist, like getting your hormones tested consistently so that you start to understand your own fluctuations. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, this is really important too on the fertility journey, but, yeah, there was really no support around this and it's changing now. Obviously I think, you know, my generation and to some degree, the generation before us has shifted, but really now the menopause conversation is on fire. And, you know, a lot of women like me, so many others are speaking out like, whoa, this can actually be debilitating. Now, at the same time, I have friends that barely had much impact at all in going through it. So you just never know. And I think, you know, my fertility journey, obviously IVF, you know, probably compounded the hormonal journey that I was on, but, and having a daughter and or having a child that late in life is, you know, while it was such a miracle and such a blessing and I had an amazing pregnancy, it also is more challenging to recover from that, you know, at 46. Than 25 or 35. So yeah, so this is a big piece. I'm going to launch a new 6-month program, really a mentorship to go through the perimenopause and menopause journey with a small group of women doing also the deeper work, the more in-depth psycho-spiritual work of this transition in womanhood, because what I see out there is a lot of talk about the hormones, a lot of talk about the biology, which is of course crucial. And I think that's the foundation, step number one, stabilizing your hormones, optimizing. But then there's a whole psychological shift of coming into midlife and really stepping into our queendom, you know, the archetype of an elder, again, being pro-aging, like what is the experience of aging in an ageist culture, of dismantling our own internalized patriarchy, the beauty myth, and really reclaiming our autonomy and our power. And also the shift in identity and the shift in values and ambition. I felt a very real pivot and shift in my career desires, and being able to talk about that and really explore that and then really craft the vision that each woman has for the next phase of their life so that we can do this in the most empowered and wise way. So that's what I'm up to right now. One of the things I'm up to right now.
Yes. I think it's such an important conversation and just important to create spaces for us as women to know that we can come and we can ask questions, we can be held, understood, seen. You know, that I love the idea of the mentorship that you're offering just to hold that space for women. Because yeah, we often, I know I felt lonely in my journey as a woman of not knowing who to turn to. And I mean, I talk to hundreds of women all the time, and still are we creating those spaces for conversation? So yeah, I absolutely love that. Thank you for just being an advocate for that, and for sharing your story too, because I know that's probably pretty personal, but it sounds like it's also a big part of your purpose here and what you're meant to share next. So I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for you, and we'll definitely be back pocketing that. I'm 34 right now, and I would love to be a mom in the next couple of years. And your whole world changes when you start to think about these new phases of womanhood. I did not think the way that I thought when I was 24, you know, how I think, how I relate to my body, the conversations that I want to have with women are completely different. And yes, I think we need more of these spaces to have
them. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think a really important piece that is fundamental for me is incorporating ritual and really creating spaces where women can, you know, when we go through a ritualized experience, it helps us to solidify that in our psyche. It's one of the most important tools that we have to anchor, to heal, to really take a full step over that threshold of initiation, whatever that is, moving from point A to point B, whether that's, you know, honoring, going through the process of a divorce or the death of a loved one, or, you know, becoming a mother, or of course, you know, beginning menstruation, changing your career, moving into menopause, you know, whatever. And it doesn't have to be something so big, you know, it could be something simple, but I'm also really passionate about teaching, holding the space, number one, and creating, particularly in my trainings and my retreats and my workshops, experiences where women in particular can have a ritual space, and we really ritualize and honor and own whatever that thing is, that next step is, so that we, you know, life is always an evolutionary path and we're always changing. And so allowing ourselves to shape shift and then, okay, here I am, I'm here. This is what I'm claiming. I'm staking my claim in the ground, you know, for whatever that is. And that is extremely healing for the psyche. And it particularly helps the unconscious solidify into the conscious mind. So on all my retreats and trainings, we have a lot of different rituals, you know? So for example, to circle back to the trauma conversation, I just did a retreat in Topanga in California in December, and it was a women's yoga empowerment and plant medicine retreat. And on that retreat, you know, I used to run a priestess mystery school. So I had a year-long urban priestess mystery school. And this is where we got into a lot of the ritual space. This is a lot of the tools of priestessing. And on the retreat in December, we did a ritual for the mother, maiden, crone. And it was a really elaborate and beautiful ritual that I designed, where there was an altar to the maiden, the mother, the crone. And so maybe if you were working on fertility, or maybe you're working on motherhood, or maybe you had an inner child wound that you want, you know, to heal, or you're calling in that child, maybe you would go to the maiden energy, right? Maybe if there was a sexual trauma in the maiden years, you would go to that altar and really work with that energy. And then you could also go to the mother altar. And again, maybe it's fertility, or maybe you have a mother wound that you're working with, or you're just calling in more support and nurturing. You could go to the mother. And then if you could go to the crone, if you wanted to cultivate more of the wisdom or the crone energy, or maybe you're stepping into that, you know, with perimenopause, menopause. So it was deeply profound for all the women, and to be able to really acknowledge and honor these different slivers of our psyche and pull them back. I think of it like a Trivial Pursuit, you know, piece, like a pie chart where we have all these different slivers of who we are, and we're reclaiming them and we're calling them back into ourselves. And so ritual is a really powerful way to help heal and to help integrate these aspects of self.
Wow. It's incredible. You mentioned plant medicine, and I know that's a part of your journey right now in psychedelic therapy and what you're offering. I'd love to end our conversation there and just hearing what that experience has been like for you, how you found that path. I know that our community is very curious about it if they haven't already tried it. And yeah, I'd love to hear where you're at with that and what that's
like. Yeah, plant medicine has always been a really important part of my evolution, my journey. And Govindas as well, who owns Bhakti Yoga Shala, introduced me to yoga. And he really introduced me to psychedelics at the same time. So psychedelics and yoga for me came in together. And I would have to say that of all of the practices, which I've done many in 25 years, 30 years, all of the psychology therapy, getting a master's in psychology, all of the retreats, sweat lodges, yoga, all over the world, you know, all of the work that I've done, I honestly feel that plant medicine has been the most transformative for me. And that's a pretty big statement. And it speaks to how profound these plant medicines are. So I've been working with ayahuasca for almost 20 years, since 2006. I've led 3 retreats to Peru and shamanic yoga pilgrimages, working with ayahuasca ceremonies in the Sacred Valley of Peru since 2007. So this is not like a new, you know, I'm not kind of jumping on the bandwagon. It's been a really important part of my journey. And understanding it through the frame of depth psychology, and even the yogic understanding of psyche as well. Which one of the things I love about different psychedelic therapies is that it does help us to access the body and the soma and connect the dots between psyche and soma. And it also really helps us to connect into a more spiritual, again, this unitive, transcendent consciousness, realizing that we're all connected. That's one of the great benefits of most plant medicines. Mm-hmm. And most of them are natural. You know, it's amazing that they come from nature and they heal. Plant medicine, there are different foods associated with each one of the chakras. Mm-hmm. And the food associated with the third eye center, which of course governs our vision, our insight, our intuition, our wisdom. The food associated with that is called entheogens, which is plant medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's been known for millennia that use of different plant medicines or entheogens, whether it's peyote, ayahuasca, psilocybin, you know, iboga, on and on, can help us to access different doorways of perception in our mind. And now, of course, we have the neuroscience to back it up. So one of the biggest pieces of the neuroscience is that most psychedelics are working with what's called the default mode network. And the default mode network is a part of our brain that governs our sense of self. And what working with most psychedelics does is it starts to soften that default mode network. So instead of having such a rigid orientation to I, me, mine, how everything's affecting me, what my identity is, what my experience is, the default mode network quiets down under most psychedelics and allows us to see things from different perspectives. And so therefore, for example, trauma, we can maybe start to revisit a memory and begin to expand our purview and not just see it from maybe the victim role of, oh, they did this to me, but maybe start to see it also from the role of the perpetrator and maybe start to expand into what might have been going on for them or how might they have even acted like this, or just to have this experience neutralized and not hold so much meaning and start to soften it. It also helps us to rewire it in the nervous system, especially if you're working, you know, it's very important. And I want to say this, of course, to cultivate set and setting so that you're doing any kind of psychedelic work in a very supportive environment. You know, you're not just at a party, like taking MDMA or, you know, not that you can't do that, but if you're really wanting to do some deeper psychological work, it's important that it's in the container, a sacred, you know, really held tightly safe space. And preferably with someone who's helping facilitate you through that material. So I've also been doing my own personal work with MDMA and psilocybin. Again, working with several of my dear friends and teachers with ayahuasca for over 20 years. But also the MDMA and psilocybin that are really powerful to work with a therapist and be doing some talk therapy and be doing some, you know, essentially the yana yoga of exploring ideas, exploring my own behaviors and thought patterns with someone reflecting it back to me. Mm. And then of course, doing that as well myself as a therapist, helping to guide people through that. So it's just one of the things that I think it's, you know, one of my definitely zones of joy and genius, and genius, because I like to cultivate that in a really deeply held ritual space. And I really like to do it in small groups, particularly small groups of women. And, you know, like the retreats where when you're in a circle with, you know, people that you resonate with, and I think particularly the field of an all women or non-binary circle, mm-hmm. you hear other people's stories and you realize, oh, I'm not so alone. You know, they had something similar, or, you know, I can relate to that. And so it just creates a healing on a very deep level. And it's really thrilling, actually, what's happening. And that this, I'm so happy to see psychedelics taking a center stage, you know, in psychology. And it's really exciting to see what's going to happen in the next, you know, couple of decades.
Wow. Yeah. Your retreats and your offering of how you're holding space in that way sounds really life-changing. I hope you know that your work is just impacting so many people. Truly.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We have to have you on one of the retreats.
Yes, I would love that. Peru is definitely somewhere I'm feeling called to. So
yeah, it's on the radar potentially soon. I will say that I'm feeling called to go back there. I haven't been there in quite a while, and it's a spiritual home for me for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it. Well, I'd love for you to share your current offerings, what is coming up for you, and how people can stay connected with you.
Thank you. Well, the easiest way is I have my membership, which is called The Haven. And this is a yoga, meditation, holistic mental health membership. And it's beautiful. We have live classes almost every week. We have a full moon. You know, there's an online library of over 200 classes, yoga, meditation, but also this emphasis of mental health and community. So one of the things that I feel like is really needed and missing in a lot of online courses and memberships is the community. And so our community is really strong. They're amazing. We are on a platform where we can have many different groups. You know, there's a parenting group, there's sobriety group, there's a yoga teacher group, mental health professionals, you know, all kinds of groups that you can go deeper and really drop into, location-based groups so people can find other members around them. And we have a full moon emotional processing work where I do my signature anger work. We have a new moon restorative practice. I do a coaching call every month. And then we do the Wheel of the Year priestess rituals on the 8 high holy days of the year, the solstice, the equinox, and the cross quarter holidays. So that's a really easy place for you all to jump into The Haven. And I'll give you a link for the 2-week free trial for anyone that wants to join. And then I'm launching my Metamorphosis, menopause, perimenopause mentorship. And that'll be a smaller cohort, maybe 30, 50 women going through a 6-month journey of anyone that's, you know, and it doesn't have to be just perimenopause, but going through these deeper experiences as a woman and having a really strong group of women around you, orienting to different archetypes, but really doing that deeper psycho-spiritual work together. That's where my heart is right now. And then launching and doing this, the psychedelic retreats. And of course people can work with me, you know, one-on-one. I do have like packages of 3 months, you know, coaching therapy. And then the retreat. So Peru is on the short list. And then we do 1 to 2 retreats a year here in Topanga. So if any of that's exciting, definitely you can hit me up. You can DM me on Instagram or just go to ashleyturner.co, ashleyturner.co.
Thank you so much. And we'll be sharing your Instagram and your website. I love following along with your Instagram and everything that you share there as well. Thank you so much just for being here, for your time, your energy, for creating this space for us to just have this conversation. I deeply appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Marissa. So great. So grateful to be here and to all of you. Please reach out, hit me up on Instagram, and would love to connect and just know who you all are. And if you have any questions, or I can send you any other resources. Thank you.
Thank you. I love hearing from each of you in my DMs about how these conversations are landing for you and what is resonating and the changes that you're making as a result of these conversations. So send me a message at Marissa Rose Nash or The Well for Your Soul and let's connect. There are so many ways to stay connected with The Well Studio globally, from afar, right from where you're at in your own home. I offer classes on our Substack, meditations, kriyas, activations, journaling questions, and even recipes for you there. And we have an incredible training coming up. If you are curious about becoming a human design reader, our human design training is starting the week of May 20th, 2024. We also have our 300-hour yoga teacher training happening again in February 2025. And all the details for all of our trainings, workshops, classes, and offerings can be found at thewellstudio.org. If you are looking to deepen and expand your life, your well-being, your mindset, and your practices, I'm also offering one-on-one coaching and mentorship for women to really support their overall well-being and holistic lifestyle. You can find all the information for each of our offerings online on our Instagram, and feel free to reach out and connect anytime.